open Senate Revenue Committee. We're going to go through the list in order because I think 853 and 2951 are pretty much ready to go. And then we have 2659 and 733. Well, we'll do 733 before 2659 because I know they're here and waiting. Open a, and I think Senator Westland is here on 733. Mm-hmm. I think he,
I do not have an amendment on 853.
Oh, you don't have the amendment.
I know what it is, but I do not have it. I think Senator Morse has it.
Yeah, Senator Morse. Seems, so, Ben, we're going to do... Dave, if you can let... Ben, Senator Wesson, we're going to do 733 in about 30 minutes. We're going to do two other bills, and then we'll get to 733, and we'll let you know about 5 minutes in advance. We're on our way. You can check if ESPN2 is... Okay, so we'll page Senator Morse for his amendment to 853. It's a bill we're pretty familiar with. When we see Senator Morse, we'll do that one. And why don't we start on 2951. So let's open a work session on 2951. And Lizbeth, this is a bill we heard last week sponsored by Representative Linda Flores.
Yeah. Chairman Deckard and committee members, what you have in front of you is a dash A2, because this is, again, that extending the sunset on the dependent care assistance income tax credit. So originally, the A and Gross bill had a sunset date of January 1st, 2027. This amendment, your A2, just reduces it 10 years. It was part of our discussion and stuff is why we had it out 20 years. So this just brings it down to 10 years. And that's really all the A2 amendment does. The revenue impact does not change because I didn't go out that far. And so that's it.
Mr. Chair, I will accede to your request to reduce this by 10 years. My preference was otherwise, but 10 years gives us a lot of time to contemplate the value of this credit, and so I move the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2951.
Senator Starr has moved... the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2951. Is there discussion on that that amendment? Any objections to adding that to the bill? So ordered, Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2951 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr's moved House Bill 2951 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Senator Metzger, we're voting on 2951, which is the bill that...
Love that bill.
Okay. And we're reducing the sunset from 2027 to 2017, making it a 12-year extension.
Okay.
Any other further discussion of that amendment? Any objection? Any objections to the motion to send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation? None. So ordered. Well, Senator Starr, I would ask you to carry it. Senator Starr is going into surgery tomorrow, Friday morning. You'd never know it by seeing him, but the vice chair has got a back surgery tomorrow, so we're going to miss him for a week or two. But if anyone will be back with us, literally within weeks, it's Senator Charles Starr. So our thoughts and prayers will be with him tomorrow at about 7:30 when he checks into the hospital. But I'll have Senator... George, do you want to carry?
It's a tax credit for dependent care. I love it.
Okay. Senator George will carry. We'll carry the bill.
Born to carry.
Close that. That work session. Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Senator Starr.
Senator Morse has helped in the audience here. He's here and looks like he's brought reinforcements with him.
Yeah, so we'll just want to get the nod that y'all ready to go. Oh, open work session. Yes, please, Senator Morris. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 853, which we have heard about a month ago. And good morning, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're a little bit behind the eight ball here this morning. What we do have is an amendment that we would like to propose. It is listed as the dash 6 amendment, and it deletes the requirements for the Department of Revenue to track this and account for it. And it's the determination of those in that department that it's really not necessary, and I would defer to our staff on this issue. It would add an expense that wasn't necessary, and so that amendment is reflected in the dash 6. So we would respectfully request that be included in your actions today.
Paul, do you want to talk about the dash 6 that you worked with Senator Morris on?
Mr. Chair, we've actually looked at this bill in another forum in the House Revenue Committee. So amendments there were considered, and which were actually dash 2, 3, and 5 amendments to the original Senate Bill 853. And what the dash 6 does, my understanding, is it takes the 2, 3, and 5 amendments, and rolls them together, and as Senator Morris pointed out, what it does is it charges the universities with tracking responsibilities rather than the Department of Revenue. So that's the only change from the 2, 3s, and 5s. I do have a preliminary revenue impact statement for you in your packet that looks at what we anticipate will happen in terms of implementation of Senate Bill 853. In a kind of an odd sense, this is one of our most certain revenue impacts, because we know the way it's the bill is constructed, that ignoring the time value of money, that the revenue impact will be zero, that the general fund will recapture the dollars through the credit that are built into in order to encourage contributions to the venture capital funds. But so it really, my estimates here are based on speculation in terms of timing. We expect the credits to begin to be used during the 06 tax year. The credits are 60% of the contribution, but only 20% can be taken in any single year. So you have this distribution over time. And so I've assumed a timing pattern, and it's actually on the back of your impact statement, kind of my thoughts in terms of the timing. There would be a $6 million contribution in 06, 5 in 07, and $3 million in 08, and that would hit the cap of $14 million. The credit impact would be spread out, because you can, again, only take 20% in any given year. So those are my timing estimates on the credit. The $8.4 million would be spread out between the 2006 and 2010 tax years. The real speculative, virtually a guess here, is when income would be generated, and that would be the basis at a 20% rate of transfers back to the general fund. So as income is generated from the development of products in the fund, those dollars would begin coming back to the venture capital funds, and there would be 20% of those dollars would then be transferred to the general fund. So based on my estimates, again, these are very hard to determine the timing, but the bill would begin to have a positive revenue impact in the 2011-2013 biennium. And it's very possible that could be sooner, or possible certainly could be later. But in net, given the mechanism that's set up here, over some period of time, the net would be zero.
So just to provide a little context for the committee, is Senator Morris and myself and Senator Johnson and Representative Butler serve on or what will be Oregon Inc. Innovation Council. And there was a $9 million package that was introduced, $7 million for ONAMI, which is the nano and micro technology center that's at OSU, U of O, and at PSU. And then a $2 million proposal for a commercialized research fund. And Senator Morse early on thought there might be a better way of getting at that than allocating $2 million in general fund revenue towards the commercialized research fund, which would really take the research, whether it's in a petri dish at OHSU or this good research that is occurring, rather than take that to how do you get that to market and how do you get it into actually a company. And he developed this proposal working with the three of us that are his cohorts. And so I believe now that $2 million is something that we're no longer, as of today, asking for, and that we're using, and I applaud Senator Morse for this, using perhaps a better mechanism with the flowback to achieve the goal, which is to really allow that research that is occurring to get to market and form companies here in Oregon and start creating jobs for Oregonians. Senator Morse, if you'd like to add anything, I do appreciate the work that has got us to this point today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to acknowledge, you know, there are many, many people that have had contributions and inputs into this concept. The $2 million, there's no doubt in my mind that would be money that would be vital and well used. The problem is it's just a one-time shot. And the concern that I've had is that, how do we integrate all the disciplines within the university system that really focuses on innovation and commercialization of these innovations? And that one-time shot of money, it just kind of is there. This will allow us to develop greater funds over time, consistent. And my fondest hope would be that as the commercialization occurs, that this would be a rolling program. You sunset the credit, and you can bring it back again, and just continue to roll this because of the recapture component. And so we just continue to feed resources into these universities and these professors for commercialization of their concepts. So I think this has a life to it. It's not your typical tax credit that it's there forever. You know, once it's in place, there is a recapture, and it eventually zeros out. And as it, you know, for us, I think as policymakers, it gets to the point of, do we have faith in the intellectual capital within these university systems to generate concepts that have commercial applications? I mean, that's the basic issue that we're dealing with today. I've had the opportunity to interface with these very bright people, and there's no doubt in my mind that the opportunities are there. And we read about them in the press consistently. Oregon State's experience, as I would remind you, as I testified earlier, of the patents that Oregon State University holds, 70% are generating revenue today back to the university. So hopefully this is a concept that would help the universities, it would help our economy and the state of Oregon.
One of the features I like most about this is that it marries perhaps someone's or an investor's entrepreneurial interests in getting a return and making an investment in, like a venture capitalist, and their love of their, whether it's their alma mater or OHSU or OSU, and they get to get a twofer. They get to contribute to their university that they love so much, and the state helps them make a contribution in research that could help all Oregonians, and it has feedback that recaptures that investment that investor's making. Questions for Senator Morse or for Paul, or we've got a few in the audience that we can call up if need be.
Mr. Chair, this seems like a good bill or A6 amendments have arrived. I think we ought to move it.
I'll recognize Senator Senator Starr.
Yes, I would move the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 853.
Senator Starr's moved the dash A6 amendments to Senate Bill 853 discussion. Any objections to that? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 853 is amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr's moved 853 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I think we should, in the interim, ask Senator Morris to work on this formula that he's come up with others, which I think is an excellent formula, and see if we can apply that to some other tax credits, and so they'll all become, you know, revenue-producing at some point in their life. And then we would take care of that structural deficit, Senator. Take care of it. But
yes.
It's excellent work. Excellent work.
Thank you.
Other comments? So the motion on the floor is before us is Senate Bill 853. The floor is amended with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Morris, carry the bill. Thank you. You waited a long time to get this bill onto the Senate floor, and glad to see it there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good work.
We can do 2659. If we let Senator Westland know that we will be meeting to 7:33 soon, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2659. Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning. Please.
Okay. House Bill 2659A retains the six-year limit for filing a refund claim. However, the approval process for the claim is simplified. Following the submission of a claim to the county governing authority on or before the end of a six-year expiration period, an order from the Department of Revenue or the Oregon Tax Court or the Supreme Court will constitute a final determination of the matter. In addition, the county assessor may issue a written stipulation that constitutes a final determination of the matter. Under current law, the same six-year limit is required. However, the county really has the final decision in the process. One might come in within that six-year period with an order from the Department of Revenue or a tax court, and that could accompany your request, but it wouldn't be a final determination. So you're really shifting a little bit. You're speeding up the process. I believe that's the intent. According to information from the Department of Revenue, there are currently about 505 outstanding refund claims under appeal that are 6 years older or more, and from the date that the claims were filed. And all of the outstanding claims pertain to property that is described as low-income housing. Some of the counties have exercised their authority to issue refunds on the claims that are 6 or more years old, and if other counties decided to follow suit within the two biennium, of course, the revenue impact would be minimal. Okay, but based on, you know, heroic assumptions, if you will, or trying to be neutral, I have said that the revenue impact is about $3.3 million in the biennium, which would be a non-recurring impact, and it's all based on the assumption that some of the $7.2 million in claims outstanding would some of them would not hold up under appeal, and another percentage of them would be authorized by the county. And so sort of like taking a middle point for the estimate of the non-recurring impact.
Mr. Kafouri.
Sure. Thank you.
Come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafouri. I'm here today representing the Metro Multifamily Housing Council. Our organization is an organization which comprises apartment house owners, both non-profit and for-profit apartment house owners, and both people who are organizations that own low-income housing and market-rate housing. Now, this bill you have today before us, we see, Mr. Chair, as a bill which does not change current policy, does not change current law, but makes current law clear. For a long time, there had been an interpretation which everyone agreed to about the fact that if the court said that back taxes had been improperly, or taxes had been improperly charged and that there was a refund due, the interpretation always had been that when a court said that, then the refund was due. A few years ago, there was what we believe an inaccurate interpretation of the law, which caused some conflict, and what this bill does is to just straighten out that misinterpretation. In the House, there was some concern from the Association of Oregon Counties. That concern was resolved with some amendments. As we understand, there is no opposition to the bill at this point. Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Chris Robinson, who's our attorney, to explain to you in more detail exactly what the bill does.
Thank you, Chairman Deckard. Members of the committee, as Mr. Kafouri stated, it is a housekeeping measure. And in terms of revenue impact, what I would offer up is that what we're talking about here is consistency in practice. The statute's been on the books for 50-plus years. And when a taxpayer goes through the appeal process and wins their appeal, they've always been paid the refunds.
Would you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Chris Robinson. I'm here. I'm an attorney in Lake Oswego, Oregon, here on behalf of Metro Multifamily Housing. As I was saying, the historical practice has always been to pay these refunds when you have a final adjudication. And that's been regardless of the number of years that have been involved in the appeal. And so what this measure is doing is ensuring that consistent practice and dispenses with a filing of a separate refund claim when you have a case pending, and then you proceed to a final determination, and then you get paid your refunds. The unfortunate thing is the appeal process has perhaps taken longer than people contemplated when this statute was originally written, and that's why Joe Schweinhardt is here. It's not just about affordable housing. This is about all kinds of tax appeals, and even in the industrial, when the appeals involve state industrial properties, they take longer now to resolve. And so this measure will ensure that if you've gone through that exercise, that you will obtain the benefits of a refund.
So, Mr. Robinson, have you litigated a case that drew this scenario or was?
Chairman Deckard, there is no pending litigation on the refund issue at this time. The pending appeals that the revenue staff discussed are pending appeals that address the value. And we're not asking anyone to get involved in that issue. That issue is making its way through the court system. It's simply once that is resolved, that this clarifies that a refund will be paid.
So give us a scenario. I mean, I'm just picturing, and I know we spoke probably a couple months ago about cases that you may have been involved with. So what is the scenario where this was problematic?
The scenario is this, with respect to affordable housing, is there were Supreme Court cases decided back in 1994 that established some new principles in how to value affordable housing. Didn't answer all the questions in terms of how you actually do that, what kind of appraisal methodology you used, and so subsequent court cases have addressed that. So some of these appeals were filed, you know, back in that time frame, and still because of several appeals to the Supreme Court, they were pended or held up, put in abeyance, pending additional court decisions. And so, for example, in Multnomah County, we have settled all our cases. They're all resolved, and the refund's been paid. Same in Washington County. Same in about six or seven, eight other counties across the state have resolved all these cases and have paid the refunds for all the years, some of them going back as far as 92.
Questions for Mr. Robinson? Mr. Schweinhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Schweinhardt, Associated Oregon Industries. First to the bill, and that is that this is a fairness issue. Today's court system and appeals process has pretty much made the current language of law somewhat obsolete because some of these cases take longer than anticipated. In fact, a lot of them take longer than anticipated. But there should not be, once a case is rendered, there should not be any discretion to pay a refund. And that's what we're trying to clarify here today. I think this bill makes it clear. To the process, the bill passed the House. Department of Revenue did not object after some amendments were made and a work group got together. The counties also agreed to the bill. And at this point, we think it's a good bill, should pass.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gail, do you need to go Waves? Department Waves? Everyone else is here on 733, so close public hearing on House Bill 2659. Open work session on House Bill 2659.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2659A to the Senate floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Charles Starr has moved House Bill 2659A to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Brzezinski, this has kind of got a legal and revenue, so it'll match your abilities in both realms.
It'll be my pleasure, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Close work session on House Bill 2659. And our last bill of the day, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 733. And Liz Beth and Senator Westland, if you want to come on up. He's not very familiar with the way the cable system in the Capitol works or the options that we have available to us, but he does know energy policy. Liz Beth, you want to introduce the bill, and then we'll go to Senator Westland.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, with Senate Bill 733A, it's dealing with the residential energy tax credit. And so this is expanding this for those for the tax credits for taxpayers who purchase large solar electric systems. So under current law, they can get a tax credit for the solar electric systems, but this is going to expand it and increase the size of the credit that they can qualify for. So it also keeps the current carry forward on the certified tax credit for 5 years, and it's increasing the total limit on the residential energy tax credit per solar electric system to $3 per watt of installed output up to 2,000 watts or a $6,000 total credit amount, versus under current law it's only $1,500 each year. And you still have an annual limit of $1,500 each year, but it's just you can carry forward more than you are allowed under current law, because each year now you are required to purchase additional solar devices in order to be able to claim the additional credit. This applies to tax credits beginning tax year 2007. So the revenue impact, there isn't any this biennium, but there will be out in beginning, because the first year they would still get the $1,500. It's just those the carry forward amount is what is increasing. So it's beginning then in the outer years. So by 2007-09 biennium, $524,251, and then it grows over time, just because we are assuming that more people will be buying more of these larger solar electric systems. And then by 2009-11, $786,231.
Yes. Questions? Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27, and thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of this very important and forward-thinking legislation. 733 is not just a bill about increasing solar energy use in Oregon. It's about creating jobs. It's about Oregon's future. This bill will help produce small business construction jobs in companies located throughout the entire state. Central Oregon already has a burgeoning industry that could be boosted with this legislation. Many jobs will be created in eastern Oregon, a region desperately in need of economic incentives, and a region, I would add, that actually has more sunshine than Florida. Beyond the construction jobs, this bill will help Oregon in the highly competitive renewable, in the highly competitive race to attract renewable energy manufacturers. These are companies of significant economic value, and any state would be proud to list them among their corporate citizens. What those businesses are seeking, what those significant economic engines are seeking, is a sign, a signal that Oregon is going to step up and value renewable energy on a par with our neighbors and those other states now passing competitive legislation. 733 helps to send that very significant signal. The worldwide solar industry is growing at an astounding rate, at over 30% annually. We want to capture some of that growth for our great state of Oregon. We are on our way. Oregon has a nationally recognized reputation in the solar industry, but we can do more. I think 733 is a significant step in the right direction. Is it everything that we can and should be doing? No. The U.S. doesn't have a comprehensive energy policy, so it's up to the states for us to become a leader in the renewable energy industries, which I know we can and will become. We need to develop a larger industry strategy, but until that day, I ask that we do what we can. I ask that we do the one small thing that we can in this session, and colleagues, let's make our solar energy more accessible, and that we pass Senate Bill 733. Colleagues, this is an important bill. This has been well thought out, and it's one that will benefit not only present Oregonians, but Oregonians for generations to come. Again, I sincerely ask your serious consideration of Senate Bill 733. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Senator Westland. Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Senator, give me a bit more about the industry. You talked about jobs and growing the industry, and I can certainly see in the bill, since the credit is for the purchaser, why you could certainly make a case that this could increase sales. But in terms of manufacturing, give me the nexus there, why necessarily this would encourage more growth of manufacturer of solar systems in Oregon. I can see the sales in Oregon, but in terms of why would this necessarily incite people to put production facilities here?
Well, two reasons. On the job issue, installation obviously creates jobs. That's a given. But on the manufacturing side, I mean, there are several worldwide companies, in particular IsoPhoton, that is very interested in Oregon. And this is a competitive industry. So they like to cluster. They like to be where, in simplest terms, they are appreciated. They've already been in Southern Oregon several times. They're holding off on their decision. And I will be quite blunt and very candid. I mean, Washington has passed very far-reaching renewable, sustainable energy legislation, and California has done the same thing. Oregon, once a leader in the industry, they've caught up to us. We've got to take the next step. And that's what is represented in 733. This is a very important, very significant bill.
It was interesting to me in talking to the governor's office, because I had this similar question of how this incents job growth, other than, you know, the natural statement that it makes. And it was interesting to hear that manufacturers from abroad want to know because the consumers, their markets are not Oregon. I mean, Oregon's a small drop in their global market. But it was interesting to hear that this was a big factor, our tax policy here, and as Senator Westland said, in many ways it's you appreciate and value the service and the values that they have, which I found interesting. But it's somewhat unique to this industry.
Well, every industry has its own culture and has its own value structure, and that's what this industry is. I don't want to call it a club. It's a, you know, bona fide for-profit industry. These guys aren't just out there doing this for fun. And given that, I mean, how every industry operates has its own uniquenesses. And one is an appreciation factor. Sure, they want to be able to make sales and install locally where they locate, but they will be locating in the United States. Several of these companies have been actively seeking sites. Part of it is just the symbolism. Part of it is the actual economic incentives. It's how they operate. It's how they work. I think this is a very legitimate response, not only to some immediate job creation opportunities, immediate relocation opportunities, but if, for the longer term, this has significant implications for Oregon. And I'm very proud to be speaking on behalf of this bill.
Senator Metzger, Senator Brzezinski.
Just one other question. expands this credit, and it's on a per wattage basis, so it could go up to $6,000, correct? And I guess my only possible concern
over 4 years,
over a 4 year period, right? $1,500 for to claim it over a 6 year, 4 year period. I guess my only concern is, and I was talking to someone about this yesterday, and about what the cost of the system generally would be, and I know you don't always have the good, better, best, but you know, I think the ballpark figure was, you know, about $20,000 for this type of a system, in which the $6,000 over the 4 year period, you know, would be a, you know, significant incentive, and that's a good thing. I guess my only concern would be is that, and I think about the black and white television I bought, you know, 15 years ago for $300 or whatever, and you know, now it's $10, and the price of things, because we get, you know, computers and everything else goes down all the time. And I guess my only concern is by putting in statute the way this is written exactly with this $1,500 for up to a $6,000 per wattage for a $20,000 system, what if 5 years from now they're smaller, more efficient, and which is good, and now you get the whole system for $6,000. And basically the credit, the state just pays for them all because the price, which was $20,000, is now a $6,000 deal. And I just was kind of wondering, Senator, if you had any thoughts about with other credits we have, where you might have something like the $1,500 over a 4 year period up to $6,000, but where there's some kind of cap where it's like, that, you know, at no case exceeding a third of the cost of the system or half the cost or something to mitigate in case, you know, the credit may itself become the price of the unit and the state basically becomes the purchaser. Does that make sense at all?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. The two responses. The facetious one is well, that's why the legislature meets every 2 years. I mean, obviously, we can look at this and revisit it. But the serious answer is, well, I guess that's a serious answer, too. The serious answer is, boy, wouldn't that just be absolutely the best of all worlds if the technology progressed to the point where the, quote, investment, and that's how I see this. If you or I were going to put these on our homes, put these on our businesses, if the investment that we're making produces a better return. Remember, the installation of these systems takes energy, or takes demand for energy out of the grid. I mean, that would absolutely, if all of a sudden we pass this bill and 2 days later, you know, the technology breakthrough comes where these become, the cost of these systems becomes a one-for-one investment, as you're saying. Well, A, we can look at this in 2 years. B, what a wonderful, wonderful problem to have to address. I mean, I can think of nothing better. That would just be great.
Yeah, I just want to follow-up comment. I mean, I agree with the idea of having a system that's inexpensive and good usage. It's just a question of who's paying for it, you know, the state paying for it versus others. And you know, the legislature will be meeting, and that certainly is a very valid point, except that once we put a credit in to modify that is now considered a tax hike under So, you know, it takes more votes to change it. That's all. That would be my only concern, is that, you know, should we build into the bill a way in which to account for possible innovative changes that make the credit not weigh the same way against the actual cost that we have today. That's I think it's a great I think it's a great idea. I like the idea of expanding it. I'm just trying to wonder, thinking 5 or 6 years ahead, you know, are we having a credit that we have to say now, gee, it's considered a tax increase and we can't get votes to undo something. I remember when we did House Bill 2041, Chair Deckard, on the highway bill last year, and we had the diesel engine tax credit. We just weren't sure how many people might do it, and so we put a cap on you know, that, just to make sure. I was just that we don't underestimate the impact on the general fund. And so anyway, that's just my thoughts on it. I think it's a great idea. Glad you brought it forward.
No, I appreciate your question.
We keep having May and Junes like this one. I think we're safe, but Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you. Senator Westland, I commend you for another bill. I've actually talked to a couple of people, and I understand that there's already a manufacturer in the Bend area that's doing part of the solar process. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing, but I know we're going to have a couple other witnesses. I guess the other things or comments, I mean, the other part that's really unique about this is that not only would we be assisting people to make that investment, but it would be a return of actually turning energy back to the grid. And I think that's one thing that we need to keep in mind. I know that the our local water service in Eugene, in a way of conserving water, gave out these new sprinkle shower heads that used less water, in the sense of it had more air going into it, so you wouldn't be putting as much gallons out. And that was a way to reduce the number of gallons that was necessary within the system. And this just seems to me to be a win-win. I mean, even if it came down to the state, and of course we can always adjust this in 2 years or 4 years, whenever it might be, but if we could actually see that you could actually assist people to produce energy to put back into the grid for other uses where you can't utilize it, and I think it would be a wonderful return and a long-term investment for the state as to the energy needs of the state as it will continue. One of the speakers that we'll have, hopefully he maybe has brought some of his colored diagrams of showing how much sun we get in Oregon on a monthly basis and then overall. And then you look at it and it laid out over the whole state. And it's just amazing, if you get out of the valley, how much sun you get. Not that you can't do it in the valley, because you can, but when you get over on the east side and areas that we're talking about potential here, really bringing and recovering a lot of basically free energy from Mother Nature.
Thank you, Mr. Wesson.
No, thank you very much for your consideration. And yes, Chair Deckard, there our appropriate apologies due. I will make my I will humble myself on the Senate floor today.
A lot of bravado.
Yes, but yeah. Two was everywhere.
It's shocking.
Although I will mention that the only person that is appropriately sartorially splendored on your dais today is Senator George.
So noted. The only sartorial splendored individual. I don't know if that's a compliment, Senator George.
I'm not too sure. Yeah. I'm going to go back and get my dictionary.
You could have used that on Sunday night. Senator Westland showed up at the Oregon State baseball game Sunday night in all green and yellow. Green yellow hat, green shirt.
Is that when the SC comeback began? When
he showed up? Exactly. Mike Rainey, Frank Vignola, John Miller. And Jeff Bissonnette, if you want to just kind of come up and we can do a four-person, that gets everyone. Thank you. but whatever order you choose.
I can go first.
Sure.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, my name is John Miller. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association, and I am speaking today on behalf of 733. I'd like to clear up a few things, though. This is not an increase in the tax credit. This is a revision, and actually it's putting a cap on the tax credit, because today, if someone goes down the road four or five years from now, they can actually get more than $6,000 on a system the way the tax credits are. So this is actually putting a cap on the tax credits, and it's revising them to reflect the nature of today's market, which has changed from before. The electric industry is one of the largest industries in the world. U.S. Revenues for electricity around $250 billion. And there's a good reason for this, because we need reliable sources of electricity for our economy and our way of life. In fact, without those reliable sources, our society would cease to exist as we know it. Well, today the electric industry is in the early stages of a revolution, and the revolution is already happening in other parts of the world, and it's called renewable energy. Solar energy is going to play a significant role in that revolution. And I know at this point some of you might be thinking, we've heard that before. What happened? Why isn't this stuff everywhere? Where is the solar? Where is the wind? Is this another bluff by the industry? And I can tell you for a fact that things have changed, and they've changed dramatically in the past few years. The largest corporations in the world are now involved with solar divisions in their companies. GE, Shell Oil, BP, Sharp Electronics, Mitsubishi, Sanyo, Kyocera, RWE, Schott, among many others, are in this industry. TV is an established multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's leveraging the advances, the engineers, and billions of dollars of research that's come before it in the computer industry. But one of the biggest changes that's taken place, especially in the last 5 to 7 years, is that we've shifted from an off-grid niche market to an on-grid market. So our potential market in the solar PV industry has grown dramatically. And you can see what's happening on the chart on the back of my testimony. And you can see right now that in 2003, 2004, we are in the vertical part of that growth curve, at 30% annually, basically, and last year was close to 40% in the solar electric industry. That growth is fueling a lot of excitement, and that's why New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Arizona, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, Colorado, and Washington have all passed solar PV legislation to encourage installations and manufacturing. $20 million program in New Mexico, $5 a watt with a maximum of $25,000 per system in Connecticut, $5.50 a watt in New Jersey for a $80 million program. Washington legislation just passed. It's getting national attention. It has a cap of $120 million over 10 years. In year 5 or 6, they expect $10 million a year for that program. But the prize that we're interested in Oregon is south of here in California. California is the third largest solar market in the world. Last year they installed about 6,500 systems. Oregon installed around 125 or so. So they're about 40 times the market of Oregon. Well, that's getting ready to change. California just passed, the Senate side just passed legislation to encourage or to install 3,000 megawatts of solar PV in 10 years. In 10 years, Oregon might install 10 to 20. So it's versus 3,000 potentially in California. It's enormous.
John, on that and on New Mexico, how do you do that, a bond to install? Is it all government buildings, or is it?
It is public buildings. It's the bond measure is financed through energy efficiency. It's through the Volt Solar Initiative that was started in San Francisco, California, and they've gone out to several states. They actually came up here to Oregon, but our prices for electricity are so low that it's difficult to get a bond measure exactly like they passed there to be financed. So they're actually financing all of the installations of PV through savings in the efficiency measures that they're doing. It's a pretty creative bond measure that they did.
Is it homes and businesses, or is it just all public buildings?
It's public buildings.
Public buildings. Okay.
Yes. So Senate Bill 733 is small compared to other state programs, but really you have to look at Senate 733 in combination with the other things that are happening in Oregon right now, with the business energy tax credit, with the energy trust incentives, with the local economic development programs that are in place to attract manufacturers. When you add all those together, 733, even though it's small, makes a big difference, and it'll definitely make a big difference to those out in Eastern Oregon that aren't in energy trust territories. So I hope I got my point across. Basically, the solar industry is growing very rapidly today. Today's solar industry looks very much like the early stages of the computer and electronics revolution in the past. Oregon cannot afford to ignore this industry. We absolutely need to encourage the growth of this clean industry in Oregon to remain competitive. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Miller? Good morning.
Chair Decker. I'm Frank Vignola. I am director of the University of Oregon Solar Energy Center. I'm also on the board of the Solar Energy Industries Association. I'm speaking to you today from the Oregon Million Solar Roofs Coalition, which is a coalition of the solar industry in Oregon and advocates of the solar industry, and we're trying to build the solar industry in Oregon. I've been working at this for about 25 years at the university. One of the things that Senator Prozanski mentioned is here's the solar resource in Oregon, and everything in yellow here has as much or more solar radiation than in Florida. So we have a reputation here, but it's not totally deserved. But we'll keep it secret for a while.
Can we take a look at that?
I actually have mine here. I'll just pass my
hand. You want to pass that?
Thank you.
I didn't prepare that ahead of time.
Senator Brzezinski had your back on the
yeah. Thank you.
Prepared.
Good staff.
Yeah. So we've been talking about, the solar industry worldwide is growing about 30% a year. And we would like to get some of this industry here so we can take advantage of this industry. We can get jobs and improve our economy. Now, Oregon has a decent solar resource, and even over here on the west side of the Cascades, we only get about 20% less than they do over in Bend. Of course, we get mostly in the summer. So it's not a big difference like wind, where wind, you have to go where the resource is. There's a big difference, location. So solar can work any place in Oregon. And Oregon already has established networks of experts on solar energy, and it's a leader in the nation on training the solar workforce. Much of the work done by John Miller here, and also some of the community colleges around the state training people for the solar industry. And Oregon is located near major markets, California and the Pacific Rim. So there's the potential's there, and there's interest in the solar industry, because I've talked to some of the manufacturers in board meetings, and there is interest in what's happening in Oregon. And what really is needed in Oregon is a stable market. And that's a key piece when the industry comes here. They want to know what the market is, because you're going to have fluctuations in your manufacturing, ups and downs. But if you usually can count on some sort of a stable market locally. And this is what this legislation will do. We've seen what's happened with the system benefits charge and the Energy Trust of Oregon in starting this market. And this will spread it across the state. So it's a very important piece of legislation, and it will attract the industry. Over in Bend, there's PV powered, which makes manufacturers inverters. Solar cells make direct current. Inverters change it into alternating current, which we all use in our houses. So it's a big industry. We'd like to see it grow, and we're supporting that too. And so they're going to be a direct benefit of this legislation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank Frank. He's a constituent and someone I've worked with over the years at his work with the University of Oregon in this area. And so the name of the company is PV Power, the one that's in Bend?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And great time.
Oh, thank you.
And I guess the other thing is, I know this is not on this bill, but there's another bill that's pending regarding 1% for public installations on solar. Can you tell me what the bill number is on that one?
That's House Bill 3001.
Okay.
And what it would do is require new public buildings to have 1% spent on solar technologies. And it would be cost effective. And so this legislation is similar to what it would do is when you build a new public building, people... Yeah. Do the solar energy last. This would make it up front, and then you can do it cost effectively. If you do it in the design and add it on later, it becomes more expensive. And so this brings a consideration. And so this is something that really would also help create a stable market. And in addition, buildings, you know, you can get the capital cost for building, but trying to get maintenance costs, as you know, is something hard. And this would bring down the energy costs. And energy prices are not going to go down in the future. They're going to increase. So this is something that, you know, will help. And well-designed buildings that include solar really look good in the public eye and stand as monuments for what you've done. You can take a look at the Lillis complex at the University of Oregon campus to see really what can be done with this technology.
Mr. Chair, one other point. I understand from talking to Senator Westland on his way out, I didn't know this fact, but Oregon's capital, I knew we had solar panels here. I didn't know we were the first state to actually install solar on our capital.
Right. Yeah.
The power's the elevator. Yeah.
On the roof.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator George.
He just hit on the point, and that is, let's make these things look like art, and we can double this money. That 1% could become more because we're required to spend a certain amount on art. So if you can design this thing, this is going to, we're going to put you to work on Senate Bill 853 because we have some incentives in there, so you can come up with pieces of solar equipment that, in fact, are artistic. But, you know, one of the points that I wanted to make when the senator was here, but I'll do it with you. A few years ago, when the hybrid cars first came out, we all said, you know, this is a great idea. We've got to provide a positive incentive, and the federal government stepped up and did the same thing. Now they're actually saying, well, we're so successful, maybe we need to back away that tax credit. But the point that I would like to make is, do you believe that we would be in a position of saying, let's back off the tax credit? Because if we hadn't stepped up in front and put the tax credit on, we probably wouldn't be as far along in the process of bringing a hybrid car into normal use. So I kind of see that the same way with solar. Do you see it that way also?
Yes. There's a roadmap developed by the solar industry on how to develop photovoltaics. And as you grow the market, the prices are going to come down. But we foresee maybe 10 years from now, they're coming down maybe 30% or so. And it depends on whether there are programs like this into place. So yes, things will come down, but you need to put the investment up front, or else if you don't have it, the markets won't grow and it stagnates.
Mr. Chair Deckard, Senator Metzger asked a similar question about the $6,000 being an inordinate amount in a few years potentially on these systems, and I can promise you that is definitely not going to happen. These systems are coming down in price, but they're not going to come down that fast. Right now, we're predicting that, I mean, it's $3 a watt incentive, but it's only up to the first 2,000 watts. We don't give anything above that. Systems in the future are going to be much larger than 2,000 watts. So that's going to limit the money that's going to be paid out under these tax credits alone, just that 2-kilowatt cap that we have in this legislation. The other thing, there's just no way that the prices are going to come down that fast. The technology is moving pretty rapidly. We're getting some big corporations involved with this, so we're gaining a lot of momentum. But we're not gaining quite that much momentum to bring the prices down that far.
Mr. Graney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Graney from Department of Energy. We also support the bill.
just mention a few brief remarks. The solar industry is growing. In the past 20 years, we've had 20,000 individuals use solar energy, most of it for space and hot water heating. But most of those are on the west side of the mountains. Even on a day like this, solar energy works. Kettle Chips here in town has put up PV electric systems on their roof, and they're generating up to 30% of their energy load through solar photovoltaics. So it is working. We're seeing an increase on the residential level as well. 5 years ago, there were less than 30 systems on homes that were PV. 2 years ago, it was doubled that to 60. Last year, it was over 170. So we're seeing a significant increase. And I think this legislation will help encourage greater use of solar electric. I also think that it is important in terms of the solar manufacturing and development industry. I've been in conversations with some of the companies from overseas, two in particular, one that would build solar panels in southern Oregon, and another one that would come in and actually take the Oregon sand and turn it into silicon that then in turn can be used for solar panels. And talking to both of them, not only were the incentives that the state could offer to the companies themselves important, but and while they're looking primarily at the California market for sales, it's important to them also that there be a system of distributors and sales in Oregon, as well as what the market is for use in Oregon. So the fact that we've had these incentives has been very important to them. Finally, on the revenue impacts, we've had a number of conversations with Elizabeth, and we had similar estimates, rough estimates of the revenue impact, likely less than $50,000 for the next biennium and $500,000 or so in the 07-09 biennium.
Questions for the panel?
Well, first of all, I think I want to go back to your comment. You said this is putting a cap that doesn't exist now, and I'd like to have you tell me where that is. I don't know of any device in current law, as I even reread it again, that doesn't have a cap on it. So which one? I mean, I think for the record, you made it sound like these things were unlimited, and any device was unlimited, and everyone in current law that I see has a limitation on it.
Chair, right now, the way that these solar incentives work, nobody could do this because it would be monumentally expensive, but they could do at least the first few years of this, and this is what they've been doing. You put on 500 watts per year. Now, if you decide that you want to increase, 500 watts is tiny for a solar electric system. These were designed for off-grid. These credits were designed for off-grid systems. You can put, next year, if you decide to increase the capacity of your system, you can get another tax credit. So you can put an additional 500 watts.
So yeah, you're buying more devices all the time.
Yeah, so basically what we're saying is buy it all at once. Because what you can't do that with these grid-tied systems. You can't, they don't easily, you don't want to put 500 on this year, 500 on next year, 500 on the next year, because the inverters are all integrated. All these systems are now starting to integrate into one another. And if you try to put a 500 watt panel worth of panels on one of these inverters that's going to take 2 kilowatts, it probably won't even work, first of all. And if it does work, by the time your second year comes around and you get a whole kilowatt on it, the efficiency of it will be so low that you're not getting the energy you should be getting out of that system. So the current tax credits really were not made for this grid-tied market. They were made for the off-grid, smaller systems.
Okay. Well, I understand. That's not the question I'd ask, though, about. You made it sound like these things were unlimited. I have one other just question, Mr. Graney, if I could, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. You know, the revenue projected, and I realize these are all estimates, and
sure,
sometimes estimates don't work out very well, but in the 09-11 biennium, the revenue losses, and I do see it as very small, only $786,000. But I want to kind of juxtapose that, and I guess I'm just asking for your thoughts on this, because we don't know. If going forward 6 years, the credits would equal only 786. Mm-hmm. And I'm comparing it to, you know, Senator Westland's comments that this could really help grow the industry. I think, well, the industry isn't going to grow very much in 6 years if we think it's only going to be $700,000 in revenue. So how do we explain the fact that, in your idea, in terms of how that market may go to get more people using solar energy, mm-hmm. and yet the numbers we project that people actually won't do it? I mean, they seem to be opposites here.
Right. Right. Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, first, it is a rough estimate that we do on the revenue impacts. We do the best we can based on projections of current demand, volume of the program, and likely increase from the impact of the increased incentive. We did assume in the revenue impact that we would have over 200 between 200 and 250 solar systems a year, so it would be a gradual increase in the number of systems. My agency did not actually do an revenue impact for the 2009-11 planning. We usually don't go out that far. We just do the first two. But to give you some perspective, the solar part of the residential energy tax credit is relatively small in terms of the revenue impact. The total revenue impact from the total residential tax credit is about $13 million a biennium, and that includes energy-efficient appliances, alternative fuel vehicles, solar electric systems, other types of solar systems, other renewable energy systems like geothermal heat pumps. So the solar, I would expect the solar revenue impacts to be on the order of magnitude that you have there, perhaps a little more, perhaps a little less, depending on, you know, how much business actually occurs. But I would think that would certainly be in the ballpark.
Chairman Decker and Senator Metzger, the other thing to kind of keep in mind is I anticipated what they are already doing under current law as far as, you know, a good portion of them are just going in each year and just, you know, purchasing more in order to upgrade. So it's not like we aren't assuming good growth in the solar industry and in these electric system industries, but it's also then considering, okay, a portion of them are already under current law would be coming in each year and just making new investments and getting a $1,500 credit. And so it's a matter of who would not be coming in each year and making those additional investments, and then they would, in that 1 year, be given a credit of $6,000 versus $1,500 and then carry that forward for 5 years. So it's, you know, I really assume that, you know, only each year only a smaller portion of them would actually be having additional amount that they would be using in those years because they wouldn't have, you know, under current law, they might have been making additional investments to get a $1,500 credit again.
Chair Decker, Senator Metzger, one of the things when Senator Westland was talking about the growth of the industry, and we talk about it as well, it's not necessarily the growth in the number of PV installations in Oregon that we're talking about. It's the ability to try to attract a manufacturer by having a local base. If we can attract a manufacturer into Oregon, we could double or triple our solar industry pretty quickly because they're building big plants now. They don't build small solar electric plants anymore. PV powered out in Bend, most of their product is going right down to California, and that money's coming back to Oregon. And the same exact thing's happening with Energy Outfitters, the largest solar business in Oregon right now, down in Grants Pass. They're a distributor. When the solar industry starts booming, they've got offices in New Jersey. They've got two offices in Canada. They're bringing in money from all over the United States and abroad as well. So the industry, we need that local market to keep, not only to keep that those people happy, because a manufacturer with a local market can work through distributor problems. They can, and they have people right next to each other that they can talk to. They don't have to send their engineers down to California or to Germany or anything like that. They've got a local market that they can deal with. So this local market is crucial, because if California passes that 3,000 megawatts and we don't have a significant market here in Oregon, you're not only going to see manufacturers going down there or in Washington, but you might see the contractors and the installers chasing that program as well. So just to stay competitive, I don't see any other way than passing 733. We've thought about this a great deal, and it fits in with the other programs in the state that exist here to help this industry.
Thank you. Thank you for the panel. Jeff Bissonnette, we have just a few more moments before we head to the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon and also the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, which is a group of about 120 public interest organizations representing consumer, environmental, and human service interests around the state. And I guess one of the main thing about going last is that everyone's had a chance to say, you don't. The only thing that you can say is what everybody else has said, and so I'll keep it very short by saying we heartily support Senate Bill 733, and I just wanted to underscore two things from the other testimony. One is just the broad base of support. In this building, we talk a lot about sort of east-west, urban-rural, and you know, I just want to point out that what you heard in terms of base of support are companies in the Willamette Valley, in Bend in terms of PV power, and Grants Pass in terms of energy outfitters. And there are also other members of OSEA that develop the industry in terms of Pratt Electric, in terms of others that are based in other parts of the Willamette Valley. And so this is a fairly unique piece of legislation that has that broad base of support from that range of constituents across the state. And secondly, I just wanted to underscore kind of where the industry is, and the fact that you know, we do have a fairly young industry, and although Senate Bill 733 is small, and we're the first ones to acknowledge that, I guess we see it as strategic in terms of, as John saying, said, is how it fits in with everything else, and the way the rest of the industry looks at that is if a state isn't even willing to take, you know, this type of small steps, what's the point of really looking for anything bigger and better on down the road? And I know that the solar industry in Oregon is definitely looking at bigger and better, and I would suspect that probably next session, certainly in the next couple of sessions, you're going to see a lot bigger and better ideas as the industry kind of solidifies and as we move these kind of base pieces of policy into place. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony. Say please support Senate Bill 733, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, close the public hearing, and we're going to adjourn Senate Revenue until Thursday morning, and Senator Starr, we will be thinking of you this evening and tomorrow.
I'll be resting well and thinking of you. You're
saving away. Yeah. Where are you having your surgery done?
At Wallopian.
Oh, right.